Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, August 9, 2017. Kenya's opposition coalition is rejecting the latest results of elections.
We are basically telling our people not to accept these results. These are fraudulent results, not only the presidential, but right through from the governors up to the MCAs. Is what we are telling Kenyans, and we're asking them to stay calm, remain calm.
And South Sudan's warring parties are fighting over control of a border town.
Our forces are in Badak right now. Previous today, they are in Badak. They take the full control of Badak, but the government forces are being surrounded in Way Station near Badak main town.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Kenya's Electoral Commission says it will not announce the results of Tuesday's elections from all polling stations today. The main opposition presidential candidate is urging Kenyans not to accept the results because they have not been verified by the Electoral Commission. Provincial results have President Uhuru Kenyatta ahead of challenger Raila Odinga. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
The usually busy streets of Nairobi were quiet Wednesday as results of Tuesday's polls continued to flow into Kenya's National Electoral Counting Center and then out to the public as they were tabulated. The National Super Alliance Coalition's opposition presidential candidate, Raila Odinga, said Wednesday morning that the Electoral Commission should not be releasing provisional results without verification through the official forms that were supposed to accompany them from the polling stations and constituencies.
We are basically telling our people not to accept these results. These are fraudulent results, not only the presidential, but right through from the governors up to the MCAs. Is what we're telling Kenyans, and we're asking them to stay calm, remain calm.
Earlier, Odinga tweeted, "The fraud Jubilee has perpetrated on Kenyans surpasses any level of voter theft in our country's history. This time we caught them." He was referring to what he says was a hack of the Electoral Commission's computer systems. Raphael Tuju is the Secretary General of Jubilee, the party of incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta.
Well, we know that it's been a very hard-fought campaign. And whoever emerges as the winner, there will be a loser. And when somebody loses, it's a fairly emotive issue, especially when you invested emotions, money, time, and energy in the campaign. But our appeal is that we should accept the results. That is what our president committed himself to, and we do hope that NASA themselves commit themselves to the same.
Electoral Commission Chairman Wafula Chebukati said Wednesday that NASA was casting dispersions on one item of the electoral process, the transmission of results.
But what we are saying is, from what I understood, the only issue is on the results transmission, not on the whole electoral process. And that's why the commission is going a little bit a mile longer, that instead of us just relying on the transmitted results, we're also calling for the original documents for purposes of knowing and verifying before we do the final announcement.
Chebukati said his team was in possession of scanned copies of forms from all 40,883 polling stations and is awaiting scanned copies from the 290 constituencies. He also said that they will be using the original forms to verify the provisional results. The commission also has announced that if there is a discrepancy between electronic and hard copy results, the signed hard copies will be final. Chebukati assured Kenyans that the official results will be released only after the signed forms from the polling stations have been verified. As a whole, the country has remained peaceful. Police used tear gas against demonstrators in the western Kenyan city of Kisumu, and there also were protests in the Nairobi slum of Mathare. But for the majority of Kenyans, for now, it's just a waiting game. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Kenyans living in Juba say they are disappointed they could not take part in yesterday's general elections. Kenya's Independent Elections and Boundaries Commission did not make arrangements for Kenyans in South Sudan to vote at their embassy in Juba. Nabil Biagio caught up with some Kenyans at a restaurant in Juba's Tomping neighborhood to get their take on the election.
Many Kenyans here say they do not think the election was free and fair. Susan Maruti, a Kenyan national who works in Juba, says she is sad about not being able to vote to choose her next president.
I've not been able to vote because now, you see, the Nimle Road is not good. So we were scared to use the Nimle Road to go back home. And it's expensive to use flight now. And at the moment, the business here is very down. I feel so bad because I'm a Kenyan and I've not voted. You know, it's my right to vote.
Maruti says she believes incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta is going to retain his position as the president at all costs.
Of course, we know Uhuru is going to win, and of which I know it's not fair. There's something behind.
Kenyan Hamis Ndulani says Kenya's embassy in Juba has failed to guarantee his right to vote.
Normally, they're supposed to be voting for diaspora, but our embassy told us that they never agree with the situation from our IBC election and here.
Ndulani says he has been watching the vote tally on television and believes there are discrepancies between the official results and what the opposition party, NASA, is saying.
There's no free and fair election. Simple because I've been following through the television. A place like Kilifi County, you see NASA is getting like a bigger margin, 15,000 votes. Then Uhuru, the side of Uhuru, is getting 2,000. You go back to Kitui, you see NASA is getting 53,000. The other side of Jubilee is getting 4,000. Those are the big, big margin difference. I've been to Kisumu. NASA is getting 89,000. Uhuru is getting like 1,000. So this difference, it creates like a difference of 150,000.
Ndulani says opposition leader Raila Odinga should be in the lead, not President Kenyatta. Kenyan Samuel Mkokigoli also believes there are irregularities in the vote and the tallying process.
I feel like there's something, it seems not good. Like, you know, Raila was winning. You know, for me, I'm supporting Raila to be my president. But there's some other issues, the counting, voting, they were not correct.
Mkokigoli says officials should conduct an immediate investigation into certain violations and irregularities that might have occurred over the past 2 days.
For me, I wanted to they stop this election, then they go for court and proceed these things, because me, I like this Raila to win.
Kenyans here in Juba say while the election results are hotly contested, they do not expect violence to break out in Kenya like it did in 2007 when more than 1,000 people were killed. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biaju in Juba.
Pro-government forces and rebels loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar both claim to be in full control of Maiwut and Pagak towns near the border with Ethiopia. Machar's stronghold of Pagak fell to government forces late last week. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
SPLAIO Machar Forces spokesman Brigadier General William Gadjas says rebels flushed the government soldiers out of Pagak town on Tuesday.
Our forces are in Pagak right now. Previous day, they are in Pagak. They take the full control of Pagak, but the government forces are being surrounded in Way Station, near Pagak, main town.
Gadjas says Machar's forces took over Pagak just days after retaking control of Maiwut, another rebel stronghold. He says fighting continues between rebels and government forces trapped in Way Station, an area 8 kilometers west of Pagak. Colonel Dixon Galwak, a military spokesman of the SPLAIO faction, led by First Vice President Taban Dengai, disputes the claim that rebels now control Pagak, calling it wishful thinking.
We are in full control of Pagak, we are in full control of Maiwut, and all those claims, I have to disregard them as baseless.
Gadluak insists government forces have retaken control of Pagak and that state authorities are working to restore diplomatic ties with the Ethiopian authorities across the border.
If you try to go and make your own fact-finding on the ground, you should have realized that currently now the state governor, Major General Bull Rajrom, is in Pagak, and he's even now meeting with the Ethiopian local authority in the border.
The claims and counterclaims of who controls Pagak have not been independently verified because of the ongoing fighting on the ground. Pagak town, located along the Ethiopian border, has remained the headquarters of rebel leader Riek Machar since fighting broke in late 2013. On Tuesday, as a regional protection force was deployed in Juba and other parts of the country, David Sierra, the head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, said fighting continued between the country's warring parties.
As we know, fighting still persists in the country, and insecurity for civilians remains a constant and real challenge.
Last week, the UN Undersecretary for Peacekeeping Operations, Jean-Pierre Lacroix, was in South Sudan and condemned the fighting between the two parties, saying it violates the permanent ceasefire. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Chronic fuel shortages in South Sudan have prevented daily newspapers from going to print for two straight days this week. Newspaper managers and owners of private printing presses in Juba say they are losing revenue due to fuel crisis. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Emmanuel Manchol, editor-in-chief of the Dawn newspaper, says clients who paid for advertising space in Monday's and Tuesday's editions are not happy.
After I have submitted my paper, I worked on my paper, edited it, submitted it for printing. With all the advertising brands that came to me on that day. So they said, well, there is no fuel. So I said, okay. We did not print that day. And then the following day, I started working again on the paper, and I submitted it to the Universal Printers Company Limited, and they also said, there is no fuel. So it became a big problem. I had to collide with advertisers.
Manchol says the paper has lost tens of thousands of pounds in revenue due to the fuel shortage.
In the last 2 days, I could say about 40,000 value that we have lost in terms of advertising companies. We print 1,000 copies a day, and all of that goes to subscribers and the buyers. We have over 900 buyers a day in Juba alone. If you can multiply that by 40 pounds, basically it will give you a value, like on assumption that all these papers would be bought, it will give you the value of about 80,000 a day, basically.
Anna Nimiriano is editor-in-chief of the Juba Monitor. Nimiriano says her paper has also experienced heavy losses for having no editions on the streets Monday and Tuesday.
We are dependent on this business, but if we do not operate 1 day or even 2 days, it will be a loss because the expenses, even we are just spending daily, we are not what recovering in terms of revenue. And for us, it's Juba Monitor, we are dependent on the revenue and the sales of the newspaper. And our revenue is coming from the advertisements.
Nimiriano says, for the past 2 days, their readers have been denied access to news and information.
Our readers, they are wondering what is wrong. They want to get information in South Sudan, what is going on. Especially some people want to hear about the national dialogue. Some people want to know what is going on in this country. So that one, they are missing. And we Juba Monitor also, we extend our newspapers to Uganda. Even our refugees there in Uganda, they want to know what is going on. And even we want to know the situation because we have a reporter there is to send us his story.
Nimiriano says she was relieved that today's edition of the Juba Monitor was printed and distributed. Suba Rawa Mamidi, the manager of Universal Printers, which prints both newspapers, says he was able to get out today's edition after buying fuel from the black market.
I have to buy at $1 per liter. This will be very expensive. It increases my production cost. We are not getting any profit out of printing the newspapers. It will be very difficult for me to buy the fuel at $1 and print the newspaper under supply. I don't know how to manage this printing of newspapers.
Mamidi says he is not sure if he will be able to print tomorrow's edition of any newspapers due to the fuel crisis. Both editors and the printing company officials are asking the state-owned Nile Petroleum Corporation to supply the printing press with fuel so it can print all the newspapers it has contracts with so that South Sudanese citizens can learn about breaking news. Geoffrey Ben, a newspaper vendor in Juba, says he has lost significant income for the past 2 days when there were no newspapers to sell. He's speaking in Arabic. Ben called on the government to prioritize newspaper companies and printers when distributing fuel to businesses.
This is the same for us South Sudanese. It is unbelievable to hear a printing press which prints newspapers has no fuel, because having newspapers is part of development. For the last 2 days, people have been coming to us asking for copies of the newspapers, but we kept on telling them we did not get any copies because the printers have no fuel.
Another newspaper reader is Moses Yengi.
Reading newspaper is always good. Find some information in, and for me, I don't feel good because sometimes I used to read newspapers to get. Sometimes they used to give information like job opportunities, so I missed it really.
President Salva Kiir appointed a committee 2 weeks ago to crack down on the sale of fuel in the black market and to ensure a steady supply of fuel to filling stations across the country. But on the streets of Juba and elsewhere across the country, the fuel crisis continues. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, cholera is spreading across parts of South Sudan. Find out where and why when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is holding you back, if anything?
Actually, what is holding me back is that, like I said, the Ebola.
Okay.
The Ebola has become a setback for the educational system in Sierra Leone.
Nothing is holding me back. It's just that the economy is bad.
One of the things is money.
Actually, there is nothing, because if I have a desire, if I have a dream, there's a say that says a dream is not what you see in your sleep, but what doesn't let you to sleep. So I already know this. So if I have a target, if I have a desire, if I have a dream, I work toward achieving that dream. So for me, there's nothing that hinders me from achieving my dream.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The International Organization for Migration is calling for rapid action to prevent the spread of cholera in South Sudan from getting out of control during the rainy season. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
More than 18,000 cases of cholera, including 328 deaths, have been reported in South Sudan since June 2016. The International Organization for Migration warns the number of cases and deaths is likely to grow, as the rainy season this year will leave as much as 60% of the country inaccessible by road. IOM spokeswoman Olivia Hayden tells VOA a combination of factors, including the ongoing crisis, the rainy season, and the movement of displaced people across the country is making it extremely difficult to contain this deadly disease.
So if you are maybe infected with cholera, or someone in your family, if you come in contact with it, and then you move to a different part of the country, you're also bringing the infection with you. We hope that it doesn't spiral out of control, and IOM, with our other partners in the UN and NGO implementers on the ground, are working so it doesn't.
IOM reports the scale of needs in this conflict-ridden country is unprecedented, with more than 7.5 million people dependent on humanitarian aid. The agency says disease outbreaks such as cholera are particularly dangerous for displaced and vulnerable populations. This includes children under 5, thousands of whom are severely, acutely malnourished and at risk of dying without therapeutic help. Hayden says IOM and partners are leading oral cholera vaccination campaigns across South Sudan. She says they are distributing cholera kits, including jerry cans, water treatment supplies, and soap. She says aid workers also are repairing boreholes and conducting hygiene promotion in cholera-affected areas across the country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In our last series on Mandela Washington Fellows, we hear from a South Sudanese who says her plans to build a business in South Sudan have been overshadowed by conflict, a dwindling economy, and a lack of access to resources for young people. From Washington, Ayen Bior has more.
As a budding entrepreneur, Margaret Lamu gets asked a lot of questions about building a business from scratch and about networking with other young professionals. But to her surprise, the questions she gets about South Sudan are the ones that she has a hard time answering.
Like from the experience we got when we were here, you know, when you tell somebody, there are people who don't know about South Sudan. They don't know about other good histories of South Sudan. What they know is there is war in South Sudan and that is. So they keep asking us questions. What is that that you people are fighting about? Because Khartoum right now is already quiet. What are you people still fighting? So it's a big question that some of us cannot answer.
Lamu has just completed a business and entrepreneurship track at the University of New Mexico, which is offered through the Mandela Washington Fellowship. She says she is eager to go back to South Sudan to apply the networking skills she learned in the southwestern U.S. state. With its abundant natural resources, Lamu says South Sudan should be an ideal country for young entrepreneurs trying to make a go of a new business.
We have resources like the forests we have. Those are all the resources, but now we are using them for shedding blood, which does not make sense. And it makes us feel like we are not people who are growing with other countries.
The nearly four-year-long conflict has ground South Sudan's development to a halt. The World Bank blames disruptions with oil production and below-average agricultural production on a diminishing economy. It also reports that the country's economy is expected to contract even further this fiscal year. If given the chance, Lamu says South Sudan's natural resources could help young people create jobs, which would boost the economy.
We really need much of putting more effort in working and starting up businesses, and that will help reduce a high rate of unemployment among the youth. It can even reduce poverty. Like, there are a lot of issues right now to deal with hunger.
The World Bank does not have any recent figures on South Sudan's youth unemployment rate, but says that poverty rates have increased to 66%. With two-thirds of the population under 30 years old, Lamu believes there is enormous potential to build the country's workforce. With an abundance of natural resources, Lamu says new startups in social, business, and medical endeavors are possible, if only the nation's political leaders would allow that to happen. Ayen Bior for VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. As Kenya's Electoral Commission tallies the vote of Tuesday's national elections, the National Super Alliance Opposition presidential candidate is urging people not to accept the results, saying they have not yet been verified by the Electoral Commission. Provisional results show that President Uhuru Kenyatta is leading the challenger, Raila Odinga, by 54% to 45%, with 96% of polling stations reporting. Odinga said today that the Electoral Commission should not be releasing provisional results without verification through the official forms that were expected to accompany them from the polling stations and various constituencies. The commission says it would not make any announcement tonight. Earlier, Odinga tweeted, quote, "The fraud Jubilee Party has perpetuated on Kenyans surpasses any level of voter theft in our country's history. This time, we caught them," end quote. He was referring to what he calls a hack of the electoral system's computer systems. In 2007, more than 1,000 people were killed in post-election violence in Kenya. Kenyans living in Juba say they're disappointed they could not cast their ballots in yesterday's general elections back home. Kenya's Independent Elections and Boundaries Commission did not make arrangements for Kenyans in South Sudan to vote at the embassy in Juba. Many Kenyans in the South Sudanese capital say they could not afford to fly home and say they do not think the election was free or fair. Kenyan national Susan Maruti, who works in Juba, says she could not go home to vote because the Nimule Road is not good. Maruti says she believes incumbent President Kenyatta is going to retain his position as president at all costs. Kenyan Hamis Ndulani in Juba blames Kenya's embassy in Juba for failing to guarantee his right to vote. And finally, pro-government forces and rebels loyal to former first Vice President Riek Machar both claim to be in charge of Maiwut and Pagaka towns near the Ethiopian border with South Sudan. SPLM-IO forces in the rebel strongholds of Maiwut and Pagak withdrew from both towns beginning late last week. Machar rebel forces spokesman Brigadier General William Gatjoth says SPLM-IO troops flushed out government soldiers from Pagak yesterday. He says Machar's forces took over Pagak just days after retaking control of Maiwut. Colonel Dixon Kotlok, military spokesman of the SPLM-IO faction, led by First Vice President Taban Dengai, denies rebels now control the town of Pagak. He calls it wishful thinking. The claims of the government forces and the rebels could not be independently verified on the ground due to extensive fighting. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Roho Yango by Solomon Mukubwa. Atakuponyesha mama tabia yako hata kama ni tabia yako uje kwa Yesu uje kwa Yesu atakuponya tabia yako hata kama ni tabia yako ya chuki uje kwa Yesu atakuponya tabia yako ya baya ndio wa kwa Yesu hata kama ni mama yako kwa Yesu uje kwa Yesu atakuponya tabia yako tabia yako been listening to Solomon Mukubwa with the song Roho Yango. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. We'd like to hear what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Join us tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.